Welcome to Hot Plate, the conversations you should be having about your food and drink. I'm your host, Mirella Amato. This week on the Hot Plate, the fifth taste, first responder baking, an odd thing to use in a dark room, and crushing it on Weird Widget. Today, I wanted to talk about umami.
Yes.
It's a topic that's often on my mind and that comes up again and again with my sensory work.
Okay. I love this.
And of course, you know what umami is, but for our listeners or for those of our listeners who might need some background information, I'll just provide some context here.
Please, let's hear it. Yes.
So when we're talking about umami, we're talking about a fifth taste.
Yes.
I'm going to take a further step back here. When we experience food or beverage, when we experience flavors, most of what we're experiencing, of course, comes from what we're smelling, right? From
right.
the olfactory. So that's anything right. that's citrus or chocolate mm-hmm. or berry. What else is delicious?
Or like roasted caramelization
roasted
and stuff, right?
Caramel. Yeah. That's all perceived by our nose. When we're talking about the five tastes, we're talking about what can be perceived by our tongue specifically.
Okay, that's important. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's sweet, salty, sour, bitter.
Yes.
And umami,
and
which is this fifth flavor. I did a little digging, and this fifth flavor was discovered in Japan in the beginning of the 1900s. It was around 1907, 1908.
Right.
And we here in the West completely ignored it till about the 80s. And to
It was even as far back as the 80s. I even thought it was more recent than that.
Well, in the 80s, there was a group that was formed to bring it to the table, like
a team,
pro
umami, the umamiers,
awareness campaign.
So nice.
No, I agree with you. It's much more recent, and I would argue that it's still an issue. Often, I'm teaching sensory, and it's easier to leave umami out than it is to introduce it when we're talking about flavors, because people don't know what it is, and it's incredibly hard to explain what it is.
Oh, wow. Okay. I get that.
And for a while, I was really beating myself up about, like, why can I not explain what umami is?
Sure.
The shortcut people will say is, it's the savory flavor,
yes,
right?
Yes, totally.
But then if you stop and think about it, how do you explain sweet? If you have to put sweet into words.
Yep.
It's just a taste that people know.
Mm-hmm. And it's instinctive. Yep.
You know, how do you explain bitter? If I have to explain to you bitter. I cannot explain to you bitter unless I give you, put a bitter food in your mouth and say that feeling that you're feeling right there on your tongue, that's the bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, umami is very, very difficult for people to wrap their brains around.
Right. I guess it's also because it's not salty.
If you had to explain umami to someone, have you ever
mm-hmm.
had to explain
Often,
it to them?
Yes.
So what route do you usually take?
I will confess I have taken the savory, not salty route.
Okay.
Right? And the way I best describe it, and so I'll back up a little bit and tell you
mm-hmm.
that when I cook, when I write recipes, I like to cook and focus on great mouthfuls of food.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I build mouthfuls of food, texture, flavor, you know what I mean? All that sort of nuance. And to me, what I love about umami is that it fills what I call that open space.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? There's
mm-hmm.
an open space. And even we know, like, there's a lot of debate about whether the whole zones on the tongue is a real thing or not. But the idea is that the umami is that, like, middle back
right.
of the tongue. And I really firmly believe when you eat a balanced mouthful that contains umami, you can feel that part of your tongue being sort of addressed or satisfied or, you know what I mean? Even engaged.
Interesting. There is some science behind that. A lot of people theorize that umami adds to the feeling of being full.
Yes.
Or
satisfaction,
the feeling of being
right?
satiated.
There it is.
When I describe it, I call it the yum factor because let's face it.
Yeah, for sure.
Things that have umami in them are yummy.
They really are.
Like, let's rattle some off.
Stuff with umami in it. Good Parmesan cheese.
The aged Parmesan
right?
with those intense notes.
That's it. Some great earthy mushrooms.
Yes.
Right?
Aged steak.
Aged steak. Oh, nice one. Because, Oh, anchovies
mm-hmm.
are my favorite. Anchovies.
The ultimate. And speaking of fish. Fish sauce.
fish sauce. Yeah, right? And it's that funkiness, right? It's not saltiness, right?
It's
because
not.
Soy will take care of that, right? In that it's not saltiness. It's a little bit funky.
But it serves the same purpose because it's an added yum, right?
Yes.
If you take...
In terms of flavor building, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Just a plain food, you add a little bit of salt, it'll add some yum. It's
right.
The same thing with, I guess you would say, with sugar for some people,
yeah.
Like Coca-Cola.
Right.
But umami fills that same
gap.
Miso.
Miso
without
does
being
that,
as salty.
Right.
Miso.
Right. And it really does fill that open space. Oh, balsamic vinegar. Very nice one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm also thinking about sherry vinegar.
Yes.
Right? It has that little funkiness to it that's very delightful. Oh, now we're talking funky. Kimchi.
Does kimchi have
umami
in it?
Yeah.
Well, that explains everything,
for sure.
Doesn't
both
it?
Both the funk and the fish sauce are happening in the kimchi, right? Both
yes.
The clay pot action that's happening and that, yeah, kimchi. And all of those kind of glorious fermented things.
Yes.
Right? Fermented pickles have a different vibe. It's like, it's not just briny. It's not just salty. It also has that fermenting gives that other space, that umami space, right? It's funky.
My feeling is that caramelization also brings in some umami.
Oh, like
it brings in some sugar for sure, but it brings that savory umami character. If you caramelize onions, for example,
it's true.
You get that deeper intensity.
That is very different from its original state.
Yes.
Right?
It's a completely different beast.
That is true. There's a mushroom too. Not so much a raw mushroom.
No.
That umami is a salted mushroom.
Mm-hmm.
Just yesterday, in fact, I was making a peanut salad dressing, like a peanut noodle dressing,
mm-hmm.
but I'm making it for vegans. And I was trying to find something to fill that space because I would have put fish sauce in there.
Right.
Right? And I was like, all the soy and lime and all these other things. But I was like, I have this open space. So finally I went with miso and it instantly did the job.
Right.
Right. It was so beautiful. I was just like, yes, that is exactly what we needed.
I mean, I identify it right away. And for me, it's a visceral sensation. I get the chills down my spine.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, if it's umami rich, And so I would really like to be able to communicate this to people more. And I think we need to make a more concerted effort to communicate this taste. To people.
And to include it in our descriptions more.
Yes.
Right? I guess that's the thing. Umami needs a bit more time in the sun.
Here's the other interesting thing about umami is when I do very basic taste training, I do it in water. So I'll have, five cups of water.
Oh, like suspensions of things. Okay.
And so one will have salt in it, and that's salty.
Yes.
One will have sugar in it, and it's sweet.
Yep.
One of them will have citric acid in it, and
okay.
it's sour. And one of them will usually have caffeine in it, and that's bitter.
I wondered what you used. Okay.
The umami one is, of course, MSG.
Oh, yes.
Which opens
another
can of worms.
Yes. It really is such a can of worms, right? And there's such fierce opinions on both sides of that argument.
Yes.
Right? And I feel myself torn because the chef inside of me is like, it really does make everything taste a little bit better.
Absolutely does.
It really does. It is something, though, it's interesting that this thing that is this flavor that we know so little about is also symbolized by this thing that is so contentious.
It's horrible. I think it was actually called Chinese restaurant syndrome. That was a horrible, horrible name for it.
Oh.
And this was based on some literature from the 60s. A gentleman who reported this, noticing these symptoms after going to a Chinese restaurant with no connection to the MSG.
Okay,
and then they did these incredibly unscientific studies.
Right.
I read an article. Essentially, they fed people like food without MSG. And then they said, okay, this one has MSG in it. Do you feel different eating this
one? Hello, science.
So, of course, they reported all these wild, symptoms.
Variables not controlled.
And then later on, they did further studies and they found that these people who were reactive to MSG did not react to it when they didn't know they were consuming it.
Oh, man.
I think once that idea is in there,
nice.
it permeates.
It really does. Like some sort of broken telephone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And something so delicious.
It is so delicious.
So vilified.
All right. I like it. I feel like I'm going to make conscious effort to be umami forward, right?
Me
with
too.
My mouthfuls and the conversation. Let's try it.
Let's make a
follow up and see how we do.
Sounds good.
Team umami.
Joshna.
Yes.
What do you have for us today?
Okay, something that is a bit au courant. Right? It is a little thing in there.
Merci. Merci.
So I have a pal of mine who just casually tossed out this notion that she has been doing first responder baking.
Okay.
Which, and I was like, tell me more.
Please.
Right? And she lives in the U.S. And she is saying that in response to sort of politics and current events and the warming planet and all of the things, she is baking as a stress relief.
Okay.
Right? Which makes easy sense because baking has always been a stress relief for me. But she's also just sort of found herself a bit compulsively baking pies and having them at the ready to fire out to give to her people.
So they can do some comfort eating.
This is it, right? It's just like,
this is the
EMS. This is sort of emergency system that needs to be. It's like that soothing comfort needs to be sent out like blackjack cards at a table, right? And I was like, I love this. I love so much about this, right? There is, I feel, a renaissance in baking, largely thanks to our wonderful friends across the pond and the Great British Bake Off.
Right.
Because it's just the most magical thing. I'm a deep, deep fan.
And we have a Canadian version
we
now,
do,
right?
Which is also wonderful. Mm-hmm. The sweetest thing is that there are Nanaimo bars and butter tarts on the menu, aww, which is wonderful and
with
sweet.
With no raisins, I hope.
Oh, no.
No raisins.
No.
We're getting sidetracked. Yeah.
But this notion of baking as a response to the state of the world mm-hmm. is something that I really want to talk about. I have just finished writing a book, or the majority of my manuscript has been submitted. Thank you. But in between moments, or at night, I would bake almost compulsively, right?
Really?
One is to do something different with my body, right? The hunch over the computer was sort of intense, but I was like, I need to not speak and not think about, you know, making compelling arguments for rebuilding institutions, you know, and just like flour, butter, sugar. And I just was thinking about this mm-hmm. and thought I'd make a list of all the things that I made. And there's like almost a dozen things on this list.
Really?
Yes.
All right, let's hear it.
Okay. I made a cheesy anchovy bread.
I'll have that.
Right?
Yes.
I made a spelt Irish soda bread. I made these Viennese whirls, which is like a piped whipped shortbread with buttercream and strawberry jam.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It is.
Okay.
It was one of the technical challenges mm-hmm. on the Bake Off. And there are these moments when I watch it and I think, I'm a pro. Could I even pull that off?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they have 2 hours and they have to make puff pastry from scratch and all this sort of intensity.
It's interesting that
yes.
you should say that comment. I'm
yes.
a pro. Can I pull that off? I have a confession to make.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I hate baking.
Really? Tell me why. It makes sense. I understand it, but tell me what for you it is.
It gets deeper, though.
Okay.
This is a big confession for me.
Oof, I'm ready. Thank you.
Because I hate brewing beer.
Oh, you do.
I do.
Oh, my God. That's such a nice piece of juice about you.
So when I started in the industry, one yeah. of the first things I did was dive into brewing beer.
Sure
I thought,
did.
I love yeah. cooking. Love cooking.
Okay.
I do all my own home repairs. I alter or dye
right.
most of my clothing. I'm very much, I'm a visual artist.
You'll make a thing.
I get in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, you'll make a thing. Sure.
And I started brewing and I hated it.
What did you
and
hate?
And I was so upset.
Right.
And I called my
sure.
best friend, because that's what best friends are for.
Of course.
And she said, right, but you also hate baking. And I realized.
Okay, tell me.
I'm a tinkerer. When I cook,
yeah.
I
yeah,
will
totally.
Add a few things,
that makes
then
sense.
I'll taste, then
yep.
I'll, you know, when I'm making my clothes, I'll,
right.
you know, I'll cut it a little bit, then I'll
and
try it
on,
and
see how the today's
pin
mood
it,
fits.
And then,
right.
you know, I tinker mm-hmm. along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So for both brewing and baking, the idea of making something and then having to wait
yes.
to see if it turns
yes.
out and having, you know, very little control in that moment, unless you're really experienced.
Yep.
Right? You don't mm-hmm. know how it's going to turn out. With brewing, it's even worse. At least baking is less than a day.
100%. Breaking is like a half an hour, exactly.
And although I'm really scientifically minded, for some reason, that precise scientific
aspect. Oh, I'm with you. That makes sense.
And the idea of, you know, I spent all day for, you know, not all day, but a good amount of time putting together the ingredients for this cake
yes.
and so on and so forth. And I put it in and I get it slightly wrong and the, you know, the middle is mushy and then I have to start over. I
yes.
can't adjust.
No, you can't. There's a point of no return once you put that thing in the oven, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So what I need to hear from you is, how is baking relaxing? I'm not feeling
so,
it.
I will tell you, there's two things, because I am a rare person. I mean, I guess I have the right job, where I actually like both cooking and baking.
Okay.
Right? Because generally speaking, we say that cooks are people who don't like rules.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
And don't like being confined. Right?
Okay.
And you can always tinker with something on the stove.
Yes.
Right? Whereas bakers are rule followers.
Okay.
Right? Whereas I don't always fancy myself a rule follower, but I really like the reliability and predictability. Right? Understanding that a few weird bits may occur, but generally speaking, if you follow these instructions and do this thing, the same result
right.
will show up.
Certainly people
again and
I know
again, right?
who are experienced bakers,
yep.
they can throw the recipe out the window. They, you know, it's
yep.
you, once you're into the zen,
that's it.
But there
it's,
is room
but it's
to play.
Also, there is room to play. But there is, even when you're not there,
mm-hmm.
if you do the right measurements
mm-hmm.
and pour it all and grease the pan and set the timer, you'll pretty much get the thing. Right?
With baking?
Yes.
Mm, well, it depends.
It depends
how
on
your
the
oven
recipe.
Runs.
There's all of that.
If it's in the yes. right corner of the oven, you know,
yes.
one corner is burnt and then the
totally oh. hot spots and you don't know about them and you should go in and turn, but don't
so
leave
much.
The oven open for too long. Yes. So I will say to you that mm-hmm. one of the things that I love about baking is precisely this thing that you hate.
Okay.
Right? I actually love the fact that there comes a point
mm-hmm.
where I have to step back and let go.
Oh,
right?
Okay, my skin is crawling.
I love it, right? Because to me, that's sort of a metaphor for life, right? I can do all my good intentions, all my beautiful organic flour, blah, blah, blah. I put it in my nice, steam, you know, my beautiful pans and mm-hmm. all the things are happening. But then, who knows, right? I'm going to put that thing in there. I'm going to set a timer. And then I'll open that oven and see what happens. I actually brought a little something here, and it's
Ooh.
The easiest, simplest chocolate cake.
I think chocolate cake, right? Mm-hmm.
I think chocolate cake does a lovely job of soothing the spirit
mm-hmm.
when necessary. So this is quite simple, and it's just no stand mixer, none of that nonsense. You have a bowl of wet ingredients, a bowl of dry ingredients, add the wet to the dry, in a greased pan, in the oven, set a timer, you're done.
How long?
20 to 25 minutes.
I can do that.
Right?
Yes.
Under an hour, you have a chocolate cake.
Sounds good.
All right.
Sounds good.
We'll post this recipe on social media to share it with the others, because I'm sure maybe our listeners are also excited.
Sounds good. Then
right?
I can have it written down a little
you
bit
can
easier.
Have it, exactly.
Okay, we'll put it on Instagram.
We'll put it on Instagram, and we will offer up the delightful comfort of a delicious chocolate cake.
The next thing I wanted to talk about today
uh-huh.
is a little bit silly.
Okay.
It's
Love
silly.
It. Okay.
It's an article that hit my radar a couple of days ago, and there is a brewery in the U.S. that mm-hmm. has partnered with Kodak
okay.
to create a beer.
Our friends at Kodak.
That you can use to develop film.
Whoa.
So you take this
okay.
beer,
okay.
you degas it, you add some vitamin C and something called washing powder.
Okay.
Which I've never heard of before.
Fair enough.
No, washing soda. So it's not baking soda. It's slightly different. Add that in there, add a little water, turn off the lights, and voila. If you happen to have film in the house.
Well, there's a lot of questions here, right?
You can develop your film in this beer.
Okay. So they intentionally, like, do you have any more information about the genesis of this?
Well, here's the thing. I dug in a little deeper, and you can develop film with any beer.
Okay.
So apparently the brewery, it's Dogfish Head, they were creating this beer that had some acidity to it. I think the acidity is a critical component.
Right.
And they happened
right.
to
that
be in conversation with some camera people and realized that this was a thing and thought, hey, let's call this beer. I think it's called Super 8. And
nice. Well played.
It's marketed in this fashion with a little poster that you can use as your instructions to develop film with beer. And I don't know, it just bothered me a bit. There's a whole thing
yeah,
with beer,
tell me.
All these different ways you can use beers, where I'm sure you've heard you can use it as a shampoo or a conditioner.
Yes, yes.
It's great for catching slugs in the garden. It has all these, beer is delicious. I can see your skeptical face. Slugs know beer is delicious.
Okay, that's
they will
where
come
you
to the beer.
Going.
They can come
you're
to
like,
the beer.
No, it entices them.
It will entice everything.
Perfect.
Yes. And I guess if you take a step back and think, okay, fine. That's great. At the end of a party, I have little half bottles of beer everywhere and there's things I can do with it.
Right.
So from a, you know, no zero waste perspective, that's fantastic. But
yes. But
to brew a beer specifically for this, what are you saying about beer as a beverage?
Yeah, right. I like that. Because is this the same argument that I discourage the use of growing food for fuel? Or to make spoons and napkins. We're like, no.
Yeah.
Food should just be eaten.
For sure.
And beer should just be drank.
Like, it's just delicious.
Drink it. I mean, look, there's a series of questions in my mind. Who needs to develop film by themselves? What, like, tell me about this burgeoning demographic.
Right.
Right? That somehow is taking photos this way and needs to develop their film. Two. Did this show up as some sort of drunken necessity? Did somebody have a roll
just
of film?
Just in a pinch?
That they were like, I gotta see what's on this film. And they, you know what I mean? They're like, we don't have a dark room. We don't have any of this. However, we do have the six pack of beer.
Well, you know what's interesting? I think it may be less necessity and perhaps the adventurous nature of people who develop film. I don't know if you remember a while back, there was a story about someone developing film in Lake Ontario back when it was super polluted.
Yes,
you remember that?
I do remember that, of course.
And then, you know, because I was a little offended by the whole, you know, why are people doing this with beer thing?
Beer, sure.
I dug a little deeper and found out that there's entire clubs that develop film with coffee. That's a thing. That's a very common thing.
Wow.
And fun fact, and I'm going to go ahead and brag about this. I don't know if it's something to brag about.
Amazing.
But they have tried to develop film with wine, and it doesn't work because it gives it like a bit of a pinkish, odd tinge.
So sorry, wine.
Beer is better than wine.
Oh,
respect.
Nice one. Okay, so here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you could drink the beer after you have developed film with it?
Interesting.
Like, can you pour it from the tray into a glass? Are any of the things that you have to add in toxic? Washing soda feels quite friendly.
Well, vitamin C is fine. You have, remember, degassed the beer.
Right.
And diluted it greatly with a lot of water. I wonder.
Oh, you really have. There's it's well diluted?
Yeah, you have to add water.
Okay.
And I don't know about washing soda. I mean,
right.
It's distinct from baking soda, mm-hmm. which makes me think perhaps it's not great.
And there's another there's another agent in there that's doing something.
And the other thing is, you know, you're putting the film in and part of the developing process is disintegrating some of what's in the actual film, the gelatin. So
yes.
I don't know if
okay.
I would.
Right. So this beer is explicitly used for this.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you buy two and you drink one and use the other one.
Nice.
I don't know.
Nice. Who has a dark room?
No one.
Like that's, and then the trays and the tongs and the clothesline and the red light and it feels like a lot.
That's true. I don't think this solving the liquid is really the biggest.
No, there's
issue.
A larger context
just
here.
Just use coffee. We didn't need a special beer for that.
For this
you know what?
Club.
That's a perfect segue into the last thing I came across in researching this, which I think is actually cool and a bit of an interesting spin on the situation. And it is this gentleman, I believe he's Swiss. He's a Swiss photographer, and he's put together a series of portraits of brewers in Europe. So he'll take a picture of a brewer and then develop the picture of that brewer with a beer that brewer made.
Okay, I love that.
See, that's art.
That is art.
It's interesting.
And it's community, and it's sweet, and it's interesting.
And
oh,
you
in.
Look at the different photos and you can tell that you know, the process was different. The chemicals were different because the beers
thing.
Were different. And in a couple of months, he's exhibiting actually at Berlin Beer Week.
Oh, great.
Yeah, we should share
fantastic.
That link on social media.
We should do that. Sounds good.
It's something I think I would like to see. And I was looking at some of the pictures and some of my friends are in there. So
that's great.
Kind of warm and fuzzy.
Oh, I've this really turned around on this idea. I feel like that is really sweet.
Time for a weird widget. What do you got, Josh?
So I have this curious implement. Let's call it an implement.
Hmm. Look at that.
Right? It is a tool, clearly a hand tool.
Yes. Right? It looks a bit like a pestle.
Yep. A lot like a pestle.
Not at all, because it has blades.
It has. It has sort of, it has
six.
Little sort of bladed angles. And if you just look at it straight on, the shape is a little bell-like.
It's like a bell.
Mm-hmm. Right? What else can we talk about? There's sort of, I guess, stainless steel on
with the,
these
with
little
the wooden
blades.
Handle. This looks antique.
It is. I found it in an antique shop in the old Prince Edward County.
Did you know what it was when you saw it, or did you have to ask?
I did know what it was.
So you've heard of them before?
I have. Just a very beautiful version of this. Key move here to recognize is that the bottom of these blade bits actually curve up a tiny little bit.
So it's not flat.
Right? It's not flat.
It's meant to be used.
Right? There potentially is some
for rocking.
Rocking motion that can happen.
So to me, this
use.
Is clearly for some kind of chopping, mm-hmm. but that's all I got.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're is totally it to it. Chop something specific?
Nuts.
Okay.
Chopping nuts. It's a nut chopper.
And it's better than a knife?
I like it better than a knife.
Because?
Because those little rounded edges mm-hmm. let you chop nuts in the bowl.
Right.
Right. Which to me is just easier because you always scrape the nut off the board into mm-hmm. a bowl anyway. So if we could just start on the bowl
yes.
and then not leaving a nutty residue on the board.
Yes.
Right. That would be super helpful. However, the thing that I like most about this is that because of the way it chops, because of this awesome sort of like six-way blade scenario, you don't get that like almost pasty, crumbly stuff that happens when you use a knife on a board.
Can I see? Did you bring some nuts? Did you?
Yeah, I got them.
You did?
I got them here. You're going to try it out.
Cool.
Right? I got these beautiful walnuts to start with. You're going to try
gorgeous.
It. You need to go
oh,
for
I'm
it.
Doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I want you to feel it.
So
that little
so
crumbling.
I'm rocking back and forth.
Just, yeah, you can go in and then rock back and forth.
This is oddly satisfying.
It is, right? Because you just really want to break up
it does
the
it a
meat
bit.
Of those nuts. You just want to.
Yeah, they're a really nice size.
Yeah, they're great. So we're thinking about cookies or squares or things. And whenever you do this with a knife on a board, you have to always accept that there's some really powdery stuff on the bottom.
I feel like that's it.
Yeah.
I got it. There's
it's quite
one,
easy
on,
and quite
one piece.
One, there's one more.
There you go.
Right.
Huh.
So I felt it quite satisfying. I'm delighted that you feel the same way.
Here's the thing, though.
Talk to me.
I know you have a rule with your kitchen gadgets.
I do.
That you don't like
do.
To buy anything that only has one purpose. Mm-hmm. Is this mm-hmm. your exception? Or have you found other uses?
It originally would have been because I think it's just so beautiful and I love the antiqueness of it. And it really does its job. Right?
Yes.
It does a job.
I can see that.
But I thought...
even with an inexperienced hand.
Right.
Yes.
But I thought what could happen here could easily happen with something like seeds or chocolate.
Ooh, let's try chocolate.
Okay. So I brought some chocolate and I'm just breaking it up.
So these are chocolate squares.
It's just like a bar. It's a bar of chocolate, right? Oh, there's some
Ooh,
sort
is
of
that chili?
You can see there's some raspberry something happening. There it is. Okay.
Okay.
So there it is. We haven't done it. Now we're just gonna not even think about the cross-contamination.
That's okay. We're not
allergic to nuts. First time. I have not done this.
Okay. It's sticking a little bit.
It is sticking a little bit.
The pieces are nice though.
The pieces are nice. It does a
it
good
is
job.
Crumbling.
It is crumbling and it does a reasonable job of just splitting something in it, but it's not, this, I need to have a sort of aggressive attitude
yeah.
about this. Whereas there was a joy
yeah.
to breaking those walnuts apart.
It's not better than a knife.
This is not
context,
better than a knife. This
context.
Is not better than a knife.
But so you would buy it anyway though.
Yeah. I think it performs very well. And I was, when I just used it last night and marveled that I love just pulling the bowl and this thing out and no knife and a board.
And it is a satisfying feeling.
It is,
down.
Right? When it gets through it. Yes. So single use, single purpose, but it does it so well that it stays.
So for you, it's a yes.
Yes.
I think for me, it would be a no because I don't eat enough nuts
there it
that
is.
I need to crack that way. but I might just get it because it's cool. It does look good. Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Hot Plate Pod. Follow me at Beerology on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And follow Joshna at Joshna Maharaj on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you to Joshna for joining us today. Hot Plate is recorded at Eggplant Picture and Sound Studios. Our audio engineer is Brad Tigwell. Original music by Dave Bell. Hot Plate is produced by Mirella Amato, that's me, and Dennis Coyne. That's a wrap.